Thanks everyone for joining tonight. We appreciate it. I think you'll enjoy Darlene's presentation. She did a wonderful job this afternoon, and I know you won't be disappointed this evening as well. And of course, at the end, we'll have questions. So think of questions as the evening goes, and we'll share with you all how you will be able to ask questions. So. Okay. Well, I'll start with a few opening remarks while people are still joining us. But good evening, everyone. I'm Steve Taylor, and I'm the president and CEO of the Sjogren's Foundation. And we're always honored to have such a great crowd to our patient town hall meetings. This is our final call of the first series of five. At the end of the call, I'll share with you our next set of six that we'll be doing. We're going to announce next week a new series of six calls that will be launching in the next few weeks that will add to the already great library of talks that we've had so far. Tonight's talk on coping with stress and anxiety during this time by Darlene Cross was well received this afternoon at 3, and we're excited to have her back this evening with us. So I'll jump right in and do the introductions for Darlene and then turn the mic over to her. But Darlene Cross has been a good friend of the foundation. She has spoken at our National Patient Conference before. And so it's an absolute honor and pleasure to introduce her this evening again. Darlene's a licensed marriage and family therapist from Henderson, Nevada, with over 20 years in private practice. Darlene's also a Sjogren's patient, so she relates to, obviously, many of you on the call this evening. She's also an author of the book entitled A New Normal, Learning to Live with Grief and Loss and Reinventing Normal. Tonight, Darlene will be discussing how to cope with stress and anxiety during uncertain times. Unfortunately, this has been a topic she's had to help cover before under certain issues such as 9/11, as well as the aftermath of the 2017 shooting in Las Vegas near where she lives. So it is an honor to have her here with her unbelievable knowledge base, as well as her experience with Sjogren's, as well as her experience presenting with us before at our National Patient Conference, meeting many of our patients and hearing their stories. So I will turn it over to Darlene Cross.
Thanks, Steve. It's great to be back from this afternoon, but from the other ones as well. As I had mentioned the first time when Steve talked about the Vegas shooting, I said, you think that these things don't affect you throughout your body? I got goosebumps and I just got them again. So apparently I'm not done with that yet. It was a tough time here in Vegas. Welcome to my therapy practice. If you've never been in therapy before, after this, you can say you have been. So take a look and you can tell people, let's see, here's one side of the office. Here's the bathroom if you need to go. Really cool ceiling fan. And that's therapy. So it's not as bad as you thought it was. As Steven said, it's been over 20 years. This December, it'll be 25 years for me in practice. And I do all types of work with adults. It's easier to say what I don't do is violence, addictions work. But my specialty has been working with particularly grief and loss and chronic illness. It's work I love to do, and it certainly fits in with the Sjogren's Foundation. I want to start by pointing out that we're going to talk about anxiety and stress, but I really want to talk about anxiety and stress. People say, oh, it's just stress. It's not just stress. These things really affect how our bodies function, and for good reason. So if we're going to do problem solving or tackle a challenge, the first step is not to dive in. The first step is to really understand what it is that you're dealing with. So anxiety in and of itself is normal. There is nothing abnormal or pathological about anxiety. It's our bodies built to survive when we are feeling threatened. So it can be, I turn the car in the wrong direction and just miss an accident. My anxiety is going to come up, but it's going to come right back down. That's appropriate. And understanding the difference between what is situational anxiety, as I just said, or what is a disproportionate reaction type of anxiety. I shared with the last group, I think this is amazing, and I learned it in graduate school. I can't cite it, but I've seen it in other places, that soldiers going into battle, and this is counterintuitive, that they immediately, their blood pressure lowers so that if they're injured, they bleed slower and it increases their chances for survival. So we are built to survive whether we like it or not or whether we want to or not. And anxiety is part of that fight or flight that we talk about and we know about. The same thing that allows, you know, a frightened mother to supposedly pick up a car. I guess that's happened. With a disproportionate reaction, I always use my example of the bear chasing me down the street. So if I have a bear chasing me down the street, I want my anxiety to come up. It's going to make me run faster, stronger. It's going to increase my instincts to protect myself. And hopefully I can either outrun the bear or outsmart the bear. That is normal use of anxiety. Where anxiety becomes problematic is when I'm running down the street in Henderson, Nevada, as if a bear is chasing me, but there's no bear. Or if that continues and doesn't dissipate. And this has been very interesting to me. In 25 years of practice, I've seen so many differences and so many trends. And what I have seen with anxiety is a steady increase. We are more and more anxious. And I think that's for a lot of reasons, and what's going on now is part of that. But I also suggest maybe we throw our cell phones away, but I didn't get any takers. Okay, so stress. Stress is also normal. Stress is, you go to the gym, you lift weights, you stress out muscles. Stress is, you're at a ball game and you're cheering your kid on and you want them to win and they do and you're screaming and yelling. That's all stress. Stress in and of itself is not good or bad. It's stress. It's part of being normal and being human. The problem is when stress becomes sustained. We're not supposed to live under stress that goes on and on and on and on. And again, along with anxiety, we are living in very stressful times, not just right now, but in general, and that's adding to the stress levels. For those of us with Sjogren's, any of the immune diseases, this is our worst enemy. Stress is what I call, and patients I work with here that are having these types of illnesses, and I work with all different types, including cancer patients. I call it the light switch. We turn on the light switch to the illness with stress. So managing our stress for us is more important than ever. And I share the story that, for me, I was diagnosed, it's been well over 10 years ago. And for a long time, I managed my illness pretty well, despite I had umpteen different doctors and different answers and different medications. But I still managed through yoga and meditation and willpower to, and staying very busy and very involved in things that are important to me, which I think is key. But I managed until I got hit with a trifecta of stresses. One was I had a rental house, and the tenants from hell, to put it in a short, this short version. I said, what I learned about myself is I should never be anyone's landlord because I kept being nice and it kept backfiring on me. I decided to sell the house, and in the process, we found out they were hoarders, and the woman refused to allow us in. She moved her 80-year-old mother in and then threatened to call the police if I came to the house, refused to give me the keys. It was a nightmare. The second thing that happened was someone hacked into my bank accounts, business and personal, and wiped out all of the money I had in my accounts, which we later learned was a scam in what was then my office complex, because all of the original tenants had been robbed. And one of the big banks, and as I offered last time, the last group, I can't say it here, but if you want to know which bank it was, just call me. I'll be happy to tell you. They blocked the entire investigation, and the people that did it got away with it. And I was stuck for 3 or 4 months trying to get my own money back. That was unbelievably stressful, and shut down all my bank accounts. So that was strike number two. Strike number three is there was a death in the family, the immediate family, that turned into one of those horror stories of people fighting over things and property and money and all of that kind of stuff that I swore would never happen in my own family. And I was so sick. I left the cemetery after strike three and was with my oldest son. He was driving, and within about 5, 6, maybe 7 hours, my mouth was completely full of sores. I could not speak. I was covered in the most horrific rash anywhere the sun had touched me. And that was my light switch. It went on, and I can't particularly say that it ever went back off. Managing these stressors is a huge demand on us as patients. At the same time, we've had a lot of practice. We know how to take care of ourselves, generally speaking, better than the general population. So now is the time to really turn the volume up on that. If you are someone who suffers from an anxiety disorder, which is different from anxiety, then you can expect a time like now to really challenge you even more than normal. So jumping in and doing things like getting sufficient rest, breathing, breathing, breathing. It sounds so corny and so easy, but it's really true, because as we become anxious, what happens is our breathing becomes very shallow. We hold our breath. And then what happens is we get a reduced oxygen flow into the brain. So our thinking becomes more befuddled. We become more anxious, and it's a really vicious cycle. And then we start getting anxious about being anxious and expecting it. So this is a good time to really take extra good care of yourself and be gentle, because this is going to be something you're going to need to take care of. Let's see. What I want to add to, so that's anxiety and stress. What I want to do is add a subcategory to stress, and that's trauma. Trauma is not normal. It is not something we need to have to survive. It's the stuff that at the extreme makes post-traumatic stress disorder. The results of trauma, depending on what type and the degree of trauma, is what it does is it comes in and it makes us feel like we're going to die. We are dying. We are going to die. We are dying, or we witness that happening in another person. So these are catastrophic events. This is huge, I think, in understanding what the difference is between a 9/11 event, which is a single
Darlene, I'll be back in 1 minute.
Event crazy, but okay.
You cut out for a minute, Darlene.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, because this I don't know why it's doing this.
I know this internet is kind of.
Where'd crazy. I lose you?
Trauma, basically into the. I actually don't know where, because I know most.
Well, next time, listen better.
Yes, exactly.
No. Okay. So trauma is not normal. Trauma is where we feel threatened. We feel like our existence is threatened. We are threatened, or someone close to us. We can witness that in another person. So that's where you get into the severe trauma. So if we take 9/11 and look at that as a trauma, which it certainly was, and compare it to COVID-19, which is a trauma, which it certainly is, it can give you some real insight into what it is that we are dealing with, because they are very, very different. 9/11, I was on television and a local CBS affiliate on 9/11, 12, 13, 14, taking phone calls. I was there on the 11th and the 12th all day long. And the big thing there was it had happened. We saw the planes. We saw the towers. We saw what happened, the rubble, people covered in ash, the smoke. Everybody was trying to assimilate it and trying to understand what happened. People were reaching out to one another. They were helping to the people to this day that are paying the price for rushing in to help others that day. If somebody dug up some rubble and out jumped a filthy, dirty, frightened dog, everyone celebrated. Everyone was so happy working together. But this was a single event trauma. Now, there's a lot of fallout, and I'm being very simplified here. But with a single event trauma, you very quickly move into healing. What do we do? And meaningful work is so important for us as humans. What I'm doing matters. So what has happened with COVID-19 is that it's really the opposite. We don't know when this is going to end. It's not a single event trauma. It's a trauma upon trauma upon trauma. It's the bear chasing us down the street, only there's a whole bunch of bears, and they seem to be procreating, and more of them are showing up, and we don't know which way they're coming from next. And at the same time, we're being isolated and separated from one another, and which takes away our most human aspect, which is we are communal beings. And to add insult to injury, when you do put the lovely mask on and you go into the grocery store, gotta hate that thing, you see people fighting over it, over toilet paper. I was in the store. I've only been in there twice. Nobody will let me go anywhere. Nobody will come visit me. They're like, we know you have this immune disease. We don't know how to say it, but we're not going to come and make you sick. I'm stuck here. But I was in the grocery store and I heard somebody say, yeah, I can't even find toilet paper. And someone goes, oh, I've got a whole trunk of it. I thought, you're lucky you got out of the store alive, lady. So we've actually, instead of falling in on our communal self, we've gotten pretty ugly. And people are getting more and more frustrated right now with being held captive at home and forgetting why we were ever put, in lockdown in the first place. So single event trauma versus an ongoing trauma, which is what we're dealing with right now. Here's the thing. You can't change this. You can't stop the trauma because these are external. Just like my trifecta of stressors that caused my Sjogren's to go full bore. I handle stress better than just about anybody I know. But there was nothing I could do about the bank theft. There was nothing I could do about the tenants. At that point, we did eventually. And there was nothing I could do to unwind this death that took place that set off a series of horrific events that people didn't speak to each other for 3 years afterwards. And irreparable harm was done. So when we have no control over it, the best thing we can do is really figure out what can we control. And we touched on that a little bit in the last hour, which I hadn't planned to, so I'll mention that more. But I do, this has been interesting to me. So the biggest thing, this is what I said also, I'm trying to remember, pull back what I did last hour, but I am not a Pollyanna type of person or therapist in any way, shape, or form. I am not a pessimist. I am a realist. When we are doing problem solving, I need to have a real understanding of what it is that I'm trying to work with. And that means being honest with myself. This has been particularly interesting to me that I've had in the last 2 weeks here, I've had three different people show up with cold sores. And admittedly, one of them was me. I haven't had a cold sore in 15 years. What in the world am I doing with a cold sore? But as soon as I felt it, I said to my partner, oh no, I've got a cold sore. Apparently I'm more stressed than I realized. I have a case here of a lovely person, horrific case of PTSD, absolutely horrific. It spanned a year and a half. She is a remarkable survivalist to even be alive. But part of her coping has been to make it all nice, make it all nice, make it all nice. I've been concerned about her in therapy because we really weren't getting to, every time she'd start to get to the work, it'd turn into all nice, and I don't want to talk about the sad stuff and the bad stuff. And I've been concerned and kind of letting her take her own pace with it and hoping that some reality would kind of come in and we could ease into it in a way that she would feel less threatened, because that's the last thing she needs, is to feel threatened. And last week she told me, my face is covered in cold sores. I said, oh no. She says, yes, it's all over my mouth, my chin, my nose. I said, that's horrible. I can't believe it. I have one too. Fortunately, mine's now healed. And I said, what does that tell you? She says, it tells me that I'm not doing as well as I thought I was. And a little voice inside of me got excited because I thought, now we've actually begun to do the work. So be honest with yourself. Look at what is going on. If you're doing one of those, yeah, but the guy next door has it so much worse, and so-and-so it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. What can you do to take care of you? And if you aren't taking care of yourself, you're in no position to go take care of anybody else. So listen to those those what I call early warning signals. So if you can take, so that's anxiety, stress, and trauma. If you can take just a minute and realize it's not just stress, it's not just anxiety, this is real stuff. And give yourself a little grade. How are you doing with anxiety? How are you doing with stress? Give yourself, you can write it down, do it in your head, an A, B, C, D, F. And if you see that your score is low, then maybe it gives you an idea of where you need to do some additional work. If your score is high in any of these areas, any things we're talking about, then good for you. Keep doing what you're doing. So pay attention, be aware, be present. As you can see, as we talk about this, it is absolutely normal to feel concerned and to feel uncertain during these times that are unprecedented, we've never been in before. In fact, if you don't feel uncertain and you don't feel any level of concern, that's what would be abnormal, okay? All right. How am I doing? Oh, faster, darling. Okay. You guys never give me enough time to talk. I've always got more than I've got minutes. So here's the thing. One of the things I've really been listening and for the last couple of weeks in sessions to themes that I'm hearing from people and personally as well. So because I knew I'd be giving this talk. And as again, I'm going to say again, I'm not a Pollyanna at all. I'm a realist. But here's something that I have heard from many people. And that is that there's a lot of good coming out of what's happened. And it's all over the place for people, but it can be somebody that has a job that has been so incredibly stressful that he said it's ruining his life. He is an immune patient and immunosuppressed patient, and he's made a decision that once things calm down that he is going to go and resign. So there's a big decision. For myself, I don't believe in type A personalities. I think that's demeaning, but I go nine times, you know, what was I going to say? I go full blast all the time. And I get frustrated with myself because I never seem to get to the end of the to-do list. And what I realized is that in these last few weeks, because I did shut my practice down to any face-to-face sessions with this illness for sure. And I got more time than I've had maybe ever. And I'm still not getting to the end of the to-do list. So what makes me think I'm going to get to the end of it when I am working and all of the other things that I do? So I've decided that, you know what, the goal isn't going to be to get to the end of the to-do list because there's always stuff to add on to it. And I'm self-employed. My boss is a real witch and demands too much. So now I'll just do the best I can with it. And if I don't get it finished, guess what? It'll be there another day. So things like that. The list goes on and on forever, but stop and think for yourself too. And this is a good exercise to write down, which is what has been good for you about this shutdown, this staying at home for hours. Are you having dinner with your family again? I'm hearing that and that people really like it. I'm hearing people say they hate Zoom. Because all the relatives, when they get together on Zoom, and won't leave them alone. Particularly, that seems to be mothers and grandmothers, although I'm both and I have not initiated a Zoom, but after today I might. But what is something that, what are one thing or more than one thing that you've experienced these last weeks that you really want to keep going in your life? Get back to reading, music, turn off the television. I put a limit on television. We talked about that the last hour too, is too much television. If you were still, you want to know what's going on, maybe you set a limit as to how much television. But what do you want to keep? And what do you want to get rid of? Another thing coming up is some pretty toxic relationships that people tolerate. And maybe what you do is you say it's time to clean house, and it doesn't mean you have to be rude or mean, but it can be as simple as, you know, I don't call you every day. Or if you send me a message, I can say, it's great to hear from you. I'm glad you're feeling well. We're busy here too. Something like that. But it may be time to say goodbye to some things like that. So write down what is it you want to keep, what is it you want to discard? And is there something you want to create, something new? There's so many new things. And the internet certainly helps us a lot with that. So that's something to take a look at. And keep it simple. Don't make it too difficult. Keep it simple. If you need to, tape it up on the wall somewhere on your bathroom mirror. And plan something to look forward to. It's springtime. It's a perfect time to get things that make you excited about the time that's coming, because this will come to an end. I don't know when, we don't know when or how, but it's coming to an end. And we don't know what things are going to look like, but we know that flowers are blooming right now and that they're really pretty and it's a great time of year. And, you know, I'm a desert dweller now. I've been here 25 years. I came for 2 years and I'm not leaving. I love it out here, but I am a Midwestern by birth and for the first half of my life. And as one, we swap out closets and for the season. So I went, and all my West Coast friends laugh at me. They think that's the most funny thing ever. And I think Birkenstocks with socks are pretty funny. So there you go. But I went and swapped out my closet. And I put all the fun summer stuff in there that has all the pretty colors. And I put all the winter stuff away, even though the weather hadn't quite changed when I did that. I'm excited about wearing those clothes now. I had the gardener put some new plants in and take out the dead ones, because the dead ones were kind of depressing to look at. And now I've got new desert plants. So something, it doesn't need to be big. It doesn't need to be expensive, but something that you feel good about when you think about next week and the week after that. My last point, and this one, I save this for last, and I preach it, and I preach it, and I preach it. When you are dealing with uncertain times, if you're traumatized, if you're tired, whatever it is, if you're not up to speed, please, please, please be careful driving. Be careful taking your medications. Times like this, it's very easy to accidentally take the same medication twice or to forget your medication altogether. It's also very easy to be out driving, especially right now. And I said, the Vegas Strip, which is 20 minutes from here, is empty. It's a ghost town, and it looks like every zombie apocalypse movie ever made. It's too easy to be looking around and go, this is weird. Oh my gosh, look at this. It's also easy to crash into another car or a light pole. So for right now, if you don't have a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday pillbox, you might want to get one. Pay really close attention to that. Get somebody to help you remember if you can. In my house, he will never help me remember because I'm too busy helping him remember. We're a site too with all of our lovely pills. Also, you know, just pay attention when you're driving, especially, and put your focus straight ahead and think and hear my voice and say, I can think about this later. So this time I went 2 minutes over, but I think we started 2 minutes late, Steve. So I'm available for questions.
Perfect. Thank you, Darlene. I have to wait for the moderator to unmute me. That's the only time in the history of the foundation Ben and Kathy Ivory can mute me, and they have to unmute me. So with that, if you have a question, and by all means, Darlene, you could have talked 10 minutes over, it would have been fine. If you, under the participant, if you have a question, there's a participant button at the bottom of the Zoom screen, which has like the number 55 next to it. If you click on that, a screen will open, and there's three grayed out buttons on that screen, and one says raise hand. So if you have a question, you can hit that raise hand. You'll come to the top of the queue, and Ben and I will call on you. If you're on your phone and you want to hit *9, that will also put you in the queue for a question. So *9 if you have a question on the phone. If you're on your Zoom on your computer or on your phone Zoom through the internet, you're not dialing in, you can use the raise hand function. So I think we have our first question. So again, *9 if you're on a phone. If you're on the Zoom platform or Zoom app on your phone or on your computer, there's the raise hand under the participant button. So think of your questions or comments or suggestions that have helped you through this situation. We're more than happy to hear any of them. So the first question goes to Debbie.
Okay, so I'm unmuted.
You are unmuted, Debbie, go for it.
Okay, so I was interested when you were talking about cold sores, because I noticed last week I had a bunch of canker sores that I haven't gotten for ages. And then I had other things going on. My very dry mouth was very much drier. I was waking up in the morning with my mouth glued shut, which usually it's dry, but it's not like, you know, glued shut. My burning mouth, the switch flipped back on. my eyes have been hurting more than usual. So I started thinking about it and I said, oh, this has got to be reaction to anxiety.
Yes.
And I know I'm doing all the right things. I'm doing calming things. I'm going for nice walks outside. I started playing the piano. I'm exercising, doing all the right things. But it doesn't matter that I'm doing all the right things because there's this constant low level of anxiety underneath it all. And my body is reacting to it. And I think that's just the way it's got to be.
Well, and I'd love to argue with you that you're not doing anything. I think you're doing a lot. What you don't know is what would you be like if you weren't doing those things?
Oh, worse, probably.
Yeah. And I do the same thing. My whole mouth will get sore. I'm really fortunate as a patient that I have severe dry eye that I battled with for years. I'm in a pretty good place right now, thanks to an amazing ophthalmologist. But my whole mouth will get sore. Herpes virus for a cold sore is not the same as a canker sore, but it's a stress reaction. It's anxiety. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I'll say, if I didn't take naps, I couldn't do what I do. I just flat out couldn't do what I do.
I've noticed I'm having corona dreams. My dreams, I mean, I'm very good at remembering my dreams anyway, but it's taken on a really interesting turn. And if in the morning when you first wake up and you still have that, can still hold that dream for a little while, you can really think about how you're being stressed. I had a dream recently about being in a room of that was crowded with people, being in this crowd of people. And that had to be a corona dream because I'm in a house with my husband and I don't see anybody. So
it sounds like you're very aware. It might be interesting to journal those dreams and have that to look back at a year.
I have been, the good ones.
Good. Yeah, good. You're very fortunate because a lot of people could not remember dreams like that. I get people that want to all the time, and it's not real common. So good for you.
Yeah. No, I've always been good at it, and I see a change in them, and I can tell what it's from. So I think... especially as a long-term Sjogren's patient. So I was diagnosed 20 something years ago.
Yeah.
I'm very aware of my body and how things affect my body. And I've really noticed it.
You are very aware. That's awesome. Now I would avoid watching TV before bed at night because it's easy to take that stuff to bed with you.
Oh, I don't do that because it's just on general principles. I read before I go to bed.
There you go.
Yeah. And I thought I'd be binging TV. But I haven't been watching more than an hour and a half of TV a day. I'm not interested for whatever reason.
Good.
I'm also scared the news is going to come on.
Yes.
It will. No, you know what? You know what people are binging on that I am hearing over and over and over is food. Mm-hmm. People are eating their feelings right now.
Absolutely.
I don't eat sweets. I'm just not a sweets person. I'll eat them, but I don't crave them. But I did. I wanted some sweets, and I knew I wouldn't be back to the store anytime soon. And I didn't know what I wanted, so I bought kind of like one of each. And I thought that way when I get home, I can eat the one that I really want. I hate them all. And I'm not buying them again.
I think it's okay to do now.
I do. Yeah, I do too. I do too.
I agree. Debbie, thank you so much. I do have a follow-up for Debbie's thing, Darlene, and I don't know if you can answer this or not, but are dreams a sign that you're not sleeping well, that you're too stimulated before you go to bed? Is there science or there's really no exact reason why you might dream?
You know, it's different with different people. You'd have to really look at what's going on and what are patterns and kind of can be all over the place.
Journaling.
Interesting. Okay. I've seen where people do lucid dreaming when they are in very uncomfortable life situations, which is right. Just getting away from your body, your life altogether. Right. But I haven't seen anything I could really categorize.
Because okay. I've been having interesting dreams, which is rare for me. So I kind okay. of agree with
them. The fact it's rare for you is what I would look at.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, if it's something you always do, then it's you. But if it's rare, yeah, that's worth paying attention to.
Okay. So if you have a question, we have another question I'm bringing in a second, but it's under the participant bar that says 53 next to it. You can click on that, a screen will open, and there's a grayed out button called raise hand. So it's under the on the bottom of your screen, you'll see a participants next to stop video participants. You can hit that and raise your hand. I will bring in Wendy now with a question. Wendy.
And on the phone, it's star 9.
Oh, thank you. Star 9 if you're on the phone. Wendy, you have a question.
Hi. Hi, Darlene. How are you? First, I want to just thank you for being here today. I also want to thank you for focusing your practice on people with chronic illness. I think that's just wonderful that you do that. I wish more people would. And I also want to say,
it's really a privilege. It's really and truly a privilege.
It's just wonderful. I can't thank you enough.
Thank you.
You must be a treasure to quite a few people, I would think. And I just wanted to say quickly that I'm so, so sorry about that triple whammy that you went through. It must have been absolutely awful.
It was pretty bad.
Yeah, it must have been incredibly, incredibly stressful. My anxiety is kind of the opposite, I think, of what most people are experiencing. I am very tired. I haven't had 1 minute of downtime since this has started. And I feel, I mean, I'm as busy as I ever was, maybe even more. It's just because the day has changed so much. But I feel kind of behind the eight ball. I see everyone doing everything they wanted to do. They're reading, they're doing this, they're doing that, planning things, helping people. And, I just feel like I'm missing out. I would love to have a little extra time, but it's just not going to happen right now. And I also have seen an increase in my symptoms. I've never really had eye problems, and my eyes are burning every day. And just like Debbie, my mouth has also been incredibly bad. Any tips on?
Well, yeah,
you're out because I don't have enough time.
You're not going to like my tip, which is I hear you when you say you're not going to get a break anytime soon. But if you get good and sick, you're going to get a big old break and you're not going to like it at all. So I would like to just invite you to consider the possibility of taking some small breaks so you don't end up with one big break that you don't ever want to have. We have to take care of ourselves. I preach this. I preach it. I preach it. And people feel guilty about it. It tends to be a very female kind of nurturing thing that I see. But I ask people when they say these things to me in my practice, I say, okay, so I've been doing this for 25 years in December. I have worked with grief and loss all of these years. I wrote the book literally, and I only typically deal with some pretty horrendous losses. And if I took care of all of my people here first, and then left the leftovers for me, which there are never any leftovers, how long could I do this for a living? So the most caring thing I can do is take care of me first so I can continue to do what I do with the people I work with.
I do, I hear you. I am a live-in caregiver for a 96-year-old woman.
Yeah,
and it's very difficult. And I also work part-time as a tutor for the medical assisting program here at the local college.
Okay.
And they've switched over to Zoom. So I am having such a hard time finding some time for myself.
And we heard that in the last hour, that being a full-time caregiver is the toughest. It's just the toughest. It really is. But when you're seeing flare-ups, your symptoms are kicking in, what's going to happen to this 96-year-old woman if you're not available?
I know. I think about it every day. And I have to plan my day, I think, extra cautious, because I just wouldn't be able to forgive myself if I ever brought something home. And that's an added stress too, just being, sure, you know, out shopping, out picking up this, out doing errands. and thinking, am I doing enough? You know, I'd like to wear a hazmat suit sometimes when I go out, because I just wouldn't be able to forgive myself if I ever brought something home. So,
yeah, and I understand that fear. I really do. Yeah. Here's, and again, I talked about this last hour in a different kind of format, but what I suggest to people I work with who are kind of in this situation, one that popped into my head immediately was a divorcing couple that I worked with who had a very autistic child, and they needed help figuring out, how do we parent and protect our son at the same time? We don't want this marriage anymore. And yeah, so those are tough, tough situations. And sometimes if the best you can do is go take a bubble bath, then go take a bubble bath. and I challenge people to do silly things like lay out a blanket on your bedroom floor and have a picnic for yourself, or listen to turn on some music and dance. I am convinced that we get old because we stop dancing. But do something that if somebody else was looking at you, they'd think you were silly. I dare you. Just little bitty breaks that make us kind of smile a little bit. And if that's the best you can do right now, then that's a lot.
Thank you. I think I'm going to have to try harder is what the...
I wish a lot of luck with this. This is a tough one.
Thank you. And I know earlier, Darlene, you gave on an earlier call, you gave a suggestion, even if you can carve out 15 minutes where you can just go out on the balcony or deck and sit for a while, or pull over the car when you're doing those errands and turn on some music and just sit there and veg out for 10 minutes a day. Just so 10 minutes for yourself versus always go, go, go. When you probably do have 10 minutes, you could maybe pull over the car and just sit there. So, and try to carve out that little time, even if it's just a little bit, might give you a re-spark. And
if it's 15 minutes, turn off the stinking phone.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you, Wendy, very much. It's funny, Darlene, I took my son for a drive yesterday because he doesn't hardly leave the house. And I was dancing all over the car. I turned on music and my hands. He was all embarrassed, but it gave me great energy. But I said, these are the memories you'll remember about your old dad and how embarrassing he was. But it gave me a lot of energy just to dance and move my arms and sing crazily for those 10 minutes. I was at a couple red lights doing it and trying to get him to do it. So those are the, you know.
I love that. That's fantastic. Yeah. I was telling Ben before we got on the call that my 14-year-old, I have four grandkids. My 14-year-old texted me and said, Grandma, can I come spend the night? Since when does that happen?
Exactly.
And I had to tell him, I said, honey, I'd love for you to come spend the night, but you can't. Right. I have to be here by myself. No, I don't have it. I promise. I don't have it. I can spend the night.
I saw a great meme on Facebook, which the parents on the call will appreciate. The grandparents might not, but it said something to the effect that when this is over, I can't wait for my for my kids' grandparents to actually raise the kids again. So it was pretty funny, but
no. No.
So we have Caitlin has a question. So we'll bring Caitlin in. Hey, Caitlin.
Hi there. Thank you, first of all, to Darlene for preparing something for us, and thank you to the foundation for keeping us all connected and continuing to make sure that we're taken care of. Sure. So Darlene, I had a question. I appreciate how you mentioned anxiety as being situational versus ongoing. So my main question is, how do you as a therapist differently treat ongoing anxiety versus situational? As I know a lot of situational anxiety, the treatment can be identifying the irrationality behind over-exaggerating fears, versus a lot of our anxieties are very real. They're health anxieties. They're honest things that we're concerned about all the time. And I mean, I do, you know, we do what the books say, we do the meditations, you know, we think about butterflies and rainbows and we take our naps and we do what everyone says and we lower our stress, but there's things out of our control that will always be there in affecting us. So what do you recommend in terms of chronic illness? How do we manage this consistent lack of control and comfort and stress management?
Well, it's a good question. And we kind of talked about this again last hour, is that my push is reality. Let's look at the reality of the situation. And a lot of times if it's situational, then sometimes people have a difficult, it's one of the reasons I wanted to define it, because sometimes people have difficulty understanding the difference. If it's a situational anxiety that's appropriate, then what we'll try to do is normalize that as a reaction that you would expect to have. Sometimes it's a normal reaction to an abnormal situation. That's a phrase we use a lot in the world of therapy. And then when people can make sense out of it, generally speaking, it seems like they're able to let it go. Now, if it's recurring, ongoing, then really, we love to have control. We humans love to have control. But I say on a good day, the best we can control is ourselves. So looking at how much control do you really have versus how much is out of your hands. And that's kind of what I'm talking about here today, too, is how we can't control this virus. We can't, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what, and by the way, the title of my book, A New Normal, I did that before everybody started using it. So they all stole it from me. I guess I should be flattered, but that book was published before. So at any rate, we don't know what a new normal is going to look like. We don't know when it's going to kick in or if it's going to last. That's pretty anxiety provoking. If you're already having anxiety, that's, you know, that's even tougher on those individuals. But learning too that anxiety is part of life. We never knew what was going to happen. People say all the time, "Oh, I didn't know that's what was going to happen." We didn't know when we opened Christmas presents last time. We didn't know we were going to be living like this. Here we are, you know, April, whatever. And so looking at it realistically, and if none of that works, and you are really struggling, I will tell you very honestly, anxiety, I don't push medications. I do consider them an option. But if you are dealing with anxiety that is increasing and it's starting to really compromise your quality of life, maybe consider some medication along with some therapy, because when anxiety, gets to the point where it's a disorder, it can really grab hold of you and mess with you. And it can escalate into panic attacks. And we start to expect a panic attack, we bring on a panic attack. Mm-hmm. So it's one thing that I am very aggressive in saying, let's knock this out before it gets hold of you. I also have very successfully over the years used EMDR therapy, and I'm not pushing it at all, but it works. And I've been able to have some really nice success with people in anxiety situations using EMDR. So that's something to
take. Can you explain what EMDR is? Because I wanted you to explain that this evening, because you did talk about it at 3 o'clock.
Yeah, it's hard. The worst part about EMDR is explaining it. Yes.
She froze as she went to explain it. So I'm going to have to make a repeat.
At least you'll know where she started.
Yes, at least I know where she started. But she'll be back in a moment, we hope.
Can you hear me? Hello, hello.
You
hello.
Cut out just as you started to explain it, Darlene.
Okay. All right. So, and this is very anxiety provoking when the internet cuts out. I am sorry. I've got state-of-the-art equipment here, so I don't know what's going on. And now I got to get my brain back. Hello.
EMRD, what is it?
Thank you. Good straight guy, Steve. Eye movement desensitization. So eye movement, the best way to explain this is it looks like hypnosis. It is not hypnosis. You are in control of yourself throughout the treatment, but it is an alternated state of consciousness. So you become very relaxed and you are doing deep breathing. Eye movement, when we have REM sleep and our eyes are moving back and forth at night, we are actually processing information that came in that day to go from short to long-term memory. All right. So eye movement, eye movement, I'm forgetting all my words, and reprocessing. So what we're doing is anytime a traumatic memory gets stuck in present tense, what we're trying to do is normalize that and move it through the short-term memory into the long-term. That is as confusing as I can possibly make it, and I've even confused my own words. It's worth getting on the internet and taking, usually when I start somebody with a new EMDR treatment plan, we spend a whole session just talking about what it is and how it's going to relate to this particular person. Let's see if I can give you a really quick and dirty. Years ago, I was in a complex with a lot of other therapists. I called it the ungroup. And one of the ladies there is a good friend of mine. And she was out at lunch between sessions and she was in a car accident. And it wasn't serious, but there was a baby in the other car. And she was freaked over this baby. Just absolutely not okay. And she had to go into session. So what we were able, she comes running to, we went through training together, and she came in and she said, would you please do EMDR on me because of this accident? I said, sit down. That fast, we were able to work through the accident, and she realized that she was terrified that baby had been hurt. And once she realized the baby was not hurt, it was fine. That's a very, very simple explanation. She was able to go back into work and she was fine the rest of the day. So, but it's pretty amazing stuff. So I encourage you to take a look at it online. And if you're going to go find an EMDR therapist, make sure that they are qualified. It looks easy. It is not. I had to go through a lot of training to get to the place where I was able to do it and get certification and all those kinds of things. Certification came after I was trained, but to get through to the point where I could actually be competent in what I was doing. So find a good qualified therapist if you're going to do that.
And it's not always for everybody, because regular counseling and therapy is a good place to start. And then
I like them together.
Yep.
There are people now that are out there just doing EMDR. And I will go on the record as an old therapist of saying I'm not a fan of that. I do it in conjunction with the cognitive behavioral treatment.
Great. I do want to mention, we do have another question I'm going to bring in a minute, but I wanted you to share, there was a great question on the 3 o'clock call around people who you're trying to help while you're dealing with your own anxiety. And the example was a husband who lost his job and got another job, was trying to get another job, and the wife was stressed out about how to help him. And you were talking about being a witness. Can you share that? Because I think it's knowledge that can go through our entire lives that's so critical, not just even during this time.
It's a huge thing. And we talked about it in Denver at the national conference, talked about it last hour. It's something I feel very, very passionately about. And I mentioned this in last hour. I don't think I said it in this one yet, but in my grief and loss work, I have worked with many, many parents who have lost children. And so the grief work with that is just astronomical. And it's a privilege to do this work. I've done it for so many years. I say, if I can help those people understand one thing they didn't understand when they walked in, then my work was really worth the time. So when you look at the whole idea of helping someone, we can get really full of ourselves sometimes, and it's not about us. And people will have asked me so many times, I don't know how you work with these parents. How do you stand it? And I said, it's very easy. I don't join them in their grief. It isn't mine to take on. It's their grief. What I do is I witness their grief. And by being able to provide witness, I'm taking it out of the husband example, Steve, to put it in another, I've got a fly in here, sorry. It is so powerful for someone to have someone who can just sit and hear what they have to say. So if it's a loved one and you're trying to listen and trying to fix their problem, and this comes from the Mars and Venus stuff too, and my own partner does that, and I may have to just take him out one day, but you'd think being with a therapist, he'd know better, wouldn't you? And I hope he listens to this at some point. I love him dearly, but geez, he wants to fix my problems. And I want you to just listen. And I'll even say, I just need you to listen to me. But the number one reason I get people who come to me for therapy with a catastrophic loss is that's seen other therapists is because the other therapists have joined them and are crying in session. And that makes it about the therapist. So in this case, the woman wanted to help her husband. She felt so badly that he'd lost his job, and yet he'd taken a lesser job, and she was lovely. She clearly loved her husband very much, but she can't fix it for him. The best she can do is provide witness and ask questions or say, I just can't imagine what this is like for you. I appreciate you so much that you're willing to go out and do this job. I don't know if I could do that. What can I do to support you? I love you. I appreciate you. In a therapy setting, it's just, I hear you. This is the one that stands out in my mind the most. And I could talk for a year with the cases I've seen. But I had a man that came to me whose daughter was a psychiatric patient, had just killed herself 2 weeks before. And he'd seen three other therapists. And he came in and he was so angry. And he said, I am so angry that I am here telling you this story and saying this again to a complete stranger. And he says, but they didn't know what to do with me. And I said, I do. And he wrote me a check for 10 sessions. He came to see me for years, and he still stays in touch with me every year on the anniversary of her death. Mm-hmm. So it's providing witness. This isn't my loss. It's not about me. And Facebook is a real problem with this too, of people going on. It's not even their family member. And the family saying, please respect our privacy. And they don't. So be a witness, be a friend, really.
I think that's, we can't solve everyone's problem and put on the fix it belt and fix it. Sometimes people just want to share. And that's what we're saying to the caller this afternoon. Sometimes let them share and be witness and be there for support.
It's a hot button for me, that's for sure.
And I appreciate you going into that. So I will bring in Steph. Steph, you'll be our last question for the evening. So go ahead, Steph.
My question is, how do I keep a family member whose stress levels and anxiety levels are through the roof from that stress and anxiety transferring over to me? Because what happens is my stress and anxiety go way through the roof, and that affects my Sjogren's and other autoimmune issues.
Yes. Good question. Really good question. Not the first time I've heard it either, that's for sure. And I'm assuming this is a relationship you can't separate yourself from.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. Honestly, I'm going to put a plug in for my own profession. I think a therapist for you would be awesome. Someone who could be your witness and someone who could help you manage through this. And even if you have to put up with this person, learn to put up some boundaries where they can't get to the point that they're going to make you sick. The most contagious illness on the planet, and sorry, COVID, is mental illness. If you've got somebody in the household that is that stressed and that toxic, it's going to rub off on you. So creating a kind of a bubble around yourself that they can't get to you and having somebody that's going to help you through it would be awesome. In my first book, I tell a story of a woman. I loved her. She was past middle-aged, grandma, and her mother had died young. And she was caring for her elderly grandmother, who was just a nasty, nasty human being. And she came into therapy because of this. It was just eating her alive. She was taking wonderful care of the woman in her own home. But the woman was just ruining her life, my patient's life. And we worked together. And then it got to the point where the woman had to be in a nursing or in the hospital, and she had to go to the hospital. She was not doing well, and they'd put her back in the nursing home, and they'd send her back to the hospital and bouncing back and forth, and it became clear that she was at the end of her life. And the granddaughter goes in to visit one. She was there every day, goes in to visit one day, and as she's leaving, she says, okay, grandma, she says, I'm gonna go now, I love you, I'll see you tomorrow. And the grandmother says, you're the one who put me in here and you could take me out. This is all your fault. I'll see you tomorrow. I might be dead. And she said, then I won't see you. I love you. And she left. And I told her therapy was over. I love that one. You've got to take care of yourself.
Well, this happens to be a 91-year-old mother that I'm referring to.
And this was the 90-year-old friend.
Yep. Exactly. Just
you
like
you got to take care of yourself. If you are having Sjogren's symptoms because of your 90-some-year-old mother, you can't do this. It's not going to do anything good for her if you end up the one that's incapacitated. I will preach this as long as anybody will listen to me. You got to take care of yourself.
Thank you.
Yeah. Good luck.
Thanks, Steph. Thanks. Good luck. Yeah, and sometimes taking that time for yourself can also be important too. So we, as well as dealing with your loved ones that you're dealing with and whatever situation it is, because there's so many situations. So I do want to thank Darlene Cross again for this great talk. I do want to encourage you a couple things. One is we did do a telehealth segment on Monday of this week. It is all of our talks so far that we've had are located on the member side of the website. We have a brand new website. If you haven't been to our new website, childrens.org, all of the patient town hall meetings are recorded them and then we posted them there. So you can go and listen to them. But the telehealth one was quite interesting and very insightful. But I encourage you, if you need a counselor, and we can't go out nowadays to counseling or to doctor's appointments as much, is to look at a telehealth opportunity with a counselor in your area as well. So keep that in mind. I know Darlene's changed some of her practice to telehealth. Many of the doctors, counselors around the country are doing that because people still need that assistance and support. So look into that if that's something you think you might want even during this time, and then discontinued after we get through the COVID situation. I also want to mention that we will be launching a new series of 6 calls moving forward. Next week, we'll be coming out with that announcement. We are going to be covering another announcement from the foundation on what we're doing with the coronavirus, especially around the hydroxychloroquine shortage, and various statements have been made around the shortage, and what we're doing in that regard with our letters to the FDA, the White House Corona Task Force, and leadership of governors and insurance boards around the country, and giving other updates. Tomorrow, you'll see a brand new frequently asked questions document on our website around higher risk for Sjogren's patients, immunosuppressants, hydroxychloroquine, what is it, things you should be doing as a Sjogren's patient, and other concerns that you've had and you've expressed to us. We have a document that's been written in conjunction with rheumatologists for some more answers for all of you. That'll be going live tomorrow. But the call next week, I'll be reviewing some of that as well as other updates that we've been progressing on. Then we're going to have a talk on things you can do in your home that you take this advantage of this time to reinvent yourself, learn something new. We're going to have a talk on various ideas that you could do, for example, taking classes, learning how to knit, etc. We have a great speaker, happens to be my mother, who's a Sjogren's patient. She's going to do our talk on that because she's an idea person. I think that's her biggest strength. Then we're going to have a talk from a nutritionist on staying healthy and eating healthy, which I definitely need during this time. Stay away from the refrigerator. I need a social distance from the refrigerator a little bit more. And so we'll be having a nutritionist do that talk. We're going to have an exercise therapist who's going to come on and talk about doing exercise in your home for people with limited mobility, as well as people that are missing their gyms, giving ideas of things you can do in your home to get exercise back into your life, or even just to start a little exercising, stretching, et cetera. So she'll kind of run the gamut in regards to meeting everyone's needs on that call. And then we'll also be having a call wrapping up around our medical and scientific initiatives for the foundation, because obviously COVID is here, but it's not stopping our work at the foundation. We're going to continue working on our large initiatives of clinical trials for a new drug for our disease, other work on clinical practice guidelines, and our research initiatives. So we're going to give an update, me and our Vice President of Medical and Scientific Affairs, on what's happening with the foundation, what we've been doing for the first half of this year, and what we plan to do the rest of 2020 and 2021. And I think, Kathy, did I get everything?
I think you've covered it all, Steve. All of them.
I got all 6. But so there will be 6 of them in the next series, so you'll be getting an email about them, because we really wanted to bring you wellness topics, topics that are pertinent to the current time. Obviously, we can always bring you lectures on Sjogren's specifically, but many of you have been to them. We have our books. We have resource sheets on our website, et cetera. We thought bringing new opportunities to you, and what a great way to connect through Zoom, get to see some of you, hear your voices, and know that we're helping you in different ways and bringing different topics. Again, I encourage you to go to our website to look at the recorded sessions from before. And again, we're always here for you at the foundation. Please be safe. Remember to social distance, and hopefully we'll see you soon. I should mention we did move our National Patient Conference from early April, we canceled, to June 26th and 27th in Phoenix. We're hoping by then some of us can travel. We might have a different type of conference. We might have to do a hybrid approach of live streaming / having people, one person at a table. We don't know. We're going to wait till we get closer and make some decisions. But of course, the health and safety of our patients will always come first. So if we have to cancel, we'll cancel when we get there. But we didn't want to give up on the conference because our patients don't want us to give up on the conference. So we're trying to get it done at the end of June. But like I said, it might be live streamed. There might be other opportunities. So with that, thanks again, Darlene, for the hours of free time that you always volunteer yourself for. I just want to mention none of our speakers are getting honorariums or payment for all the time they give. So we appreciate, Darlene. Thank you so much. And again, everyone be safe. We'll see you guys.